attention is the smallest thing that you want, the biggest thing, but in the smallest way of explaining to kids what you want to happen throughout that time. So in this particular lesson where it says recognises that maras are our negative states of mind, that's what you want. By the end of the lesson, that's what you want. So however you go about it, that's the intent you have to keep in mind. At the end, you would be expecting that at least 80% of your kids could tell you, or recognise at least, that maras are the negative state of mind. So it's small. The outcome is understand the greatest battle is the overcoming of maras in us all. So it's a big picture outcome. Now we've narrowed right down to say we want them to be able to recognise that maras are a negative state of mind. Can you see how we've gone from big to little? And it might take 3 or 4 steps to get them through that, but that's what you want at the end. Now, in schools, we are using learning intentions and success criteria. You don't have to have success criteria. The only thing it's useful for is your assessment column here. Because whatever your success criteria is, the process you want them to go through is the assessment, is what you're going to be looking for. So in order to get that, you might want them to be able to state one of the, and I'm making it up because I don't know what they are, state a negative mara, for example. You might want them to be able to tell you that. So when you come back to the floor after you've finished your lesson and you've got your reflection time, you might ask 4 or 5 kids, give me one negative state of mind that you might have about aggression or anger, or I'm presuming that's it, those sorts of things. So you can do feedback based on that. So in your success criteria, you might say that at the end of the lesson, we're going to be able to do this, this, and this. This is what I want you to be able to do. As I said before, we actually have it up. So if, for example, I was to give you a sheet, say this size, and you laminate it, some teachers, you'll probably see them in the classrooms. In fact, most of the classrooms that you go into will probably have them. They'll either call them learning intentions or they might call them a WALT. W-A-L-T. You might see something that looks like that. I don't want to lean on the table and go through it. So we would have, so most of them call them WALT, and that is we are learning to. Okay, that might be what you see. In my school, we call them learning intentions. It just depends on the school. So for example, if we had a chart, laminated like this, it would go to every lesson that we have. And it just stays on the board. So then I would go up, if I'm doing English, for example, and it's about writing a sentence. My learning intention is to write a sentence with one adjective in it. I would go up and write what the learning intention is. So your week would be, your learning intention is to recognise that maras are a negative state of mind. So you would actually write that up. The reason we do them laminated is because at the end of that, you rub it off and you take it back for the next week. So you only need one of them. But if you've got it up and it's in your face, you will keep referring to it, which is good, because the whole idea of a learning intention is that the kids keep going back to it. And throughout the lesson should keep going back to that, so it keeps you on track as well. So if suddenly at the end of the lesson you're talking about the 3 acts of goodness, you suddenly go, whoa, how do I get there from there? Because my learning intention is this. So it keeps you on track as well. And again, if you've got your lessons planned, which I know you're spending some time on tomorrow, you might have all of those set. So you can actually get your laminated piece. I could have done it for you, I presume. Do you have access to laminating or anything? You do? Beautiful. It's kind of got to be this size, any smaller, and the kids don't read it, nor do you. You forget it's there. But if you've got one that size, it's good to take along to every lesson that you have, just so you keep yourself on track and keep them on track.
Just an interesting thing. I used to teach the ethic class.
Yep.
And then each teacher, by your own interest, we all bought a small whiteboard.
Yes.
It's really whiteboard. Cheap. Yeah, very cheap from
yes.
IKEA.
Yes.
But $7 maximum.
Just as perfect.
With the marker.
Yes.
And then just do that.
Yes.
It's a bit of carrying. Not heavy, but the size is a bit awkward. You can't get into a normal bag. But
yes. You need to carry it under. They're very light.
Very light.
Where do you put that on the, like with you'd have magnets, you'd have to carry some sort of...
Yeah, I wrote down before the class started, before the student went to the classroom. I wrote it down and then I just leave it on the whiteboard.
Balancing.
Because that was the primary school. Yep. They have that kind of...
We do have boards everywhere.
Yes, yes.
Wheelie boards that move around and stuff.
Because the board was so light. It's a cheap one.
Yeah.
Only one side,
Both sides. That's right, yeah. And it's just got a wooden outside or something. Very, very light. Yeah. And they're very useful. So that's exactly what that
I'm
is.
I'm still having it after 3 years.
There you go. Still using it. But you could actually, you could use the school one. Yeah. Most schools have them, as long as they're not the interactive ones, because they don't write on those. They'll get a bit cross with you. But yeah, any interactive whiteboard, any whiteboard, sorry, that's not interactive, so like this one, for example, you can write on it and just, you know, rub it off. So if you don't even have anything, it doesn't really matter. Mm. It's just a really nice way of keeping yourself and everybody else on track. Mm. And throughout the process, even as, you know, you're sitting there and you've finished your discussion or whatever it might be that you were doing, I think this one was a discussion, or you read a story, I think, actually, I would go back to it. Remember today, our learning intention is to be able to recognise that Maras are our negative state of mind. I might say that 3 or 4 times in a lesson, and especially at the end, and I know you don't get a lot of time, so you probably don't always get to that reflection time, but the reflection time's the most important time to use it, because that's when you can start jotting down the kids that have got it and the kids who had no idea whether or not you actually got to the intention of your lesson. And there'll always be those that have no idea. Turned off 90 lights and all I turned off. The whole place is probably in darkness out there. So learning intentions are descriptions of what learners should know, understand and be able to do by the end of a lesson period or a unit. Learning intentions are the basis for tracking student progress, providing feedback and assessment achievement. It's nice to have it because you can keep giving positive feedback to the kids who are doing it properly around the intention. I really like the way that you've identified on your sheet the two Maras that you have the most trouble with, negative, whatever it might be. Okay? So you can keep referring back to the intention as you're giving your feedback. So your feedback's not just great job, like it is in behaviour, where you might just be saying, good job, I really like the way you're sitting. We're actually saying, good job, I really like the way that you've done that. It's not just open-ended feedback. What that does for kids, most importantly, is gives them meaning as to why they're even bothering. So if you just say, good job, I like the way you coloured, or something like that, to them that doesn't really mean anything. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're narrowing into, you've actually learnt something good today, that gives them encouragement to keep wanting to learn more. Mm-hmm. In addition to learning intentions, students may also have an you don't have to worry about that, in addressing their learning. So on top of a learning intention, we also give our kids what we call a learning goal. If you've got a really tricky kid, you could have a learning goal on top of your intention, where it might just be to be able to sit in the seat during discussion time. You know, if it was getting that bad that you were really struggling with a child, you might want to do that, but generally speaking, you're not there long enough to worry about that. They provide students with appropriate challenge. It's really interesting because quite often our expectations of kids can be less than what they can actually give us. And he was talking about that in that whole idea of listening to what they do and what they know and what they want. Because quite often we will go in with an attitude of they don't know that, or they'll never be able to achieve that, when reality is they do and they can. So, and it may not be all of them, and they might need different scaffolding to get there, but generally speaking, they will get there. Somehow or some way they will make it. We have to kind of try to make sure that we think about our top kids, those who always do the right thing, and making it just a little bit harder for them. Those kids who don't ever get it, who you know struggle to even go back and sit in the seat and colour in the page, they're the ones you keep with you. You wouldn't send them back without having a bit more instruction before they go. Students share a commitment to achieving them as they're more likely to seek feedback. So because everyone's got the same and everyone knows what it is and you're talking about it often throughout the time, they might actually start to seek feedback from you. Excuse me, miss, do I have the Maras that I'm meant to have? Do I have one? Is one of mine a Mara? And so suddenly you've got kids talking the talk of the intention that you've never had before. And you're like, wow, you know, my kids are using the language that I'm using here. They're not just saying I'm done. They're actually seeking more appropriate feedback. And you'll have kids already who would do that because they'd be used to this process from their own class. They're generalizable to allow effective transfer of learnt skills to different contexts. So that means we don't narrow them down that much that they only suit one particular area. And even with your scripture lessons, you know, the goodness that they take away from understanding their maras doesn't just have to happen in scripture. We'd be hoping that it happens in the playground and it happens in the classroom and it happens at home, so that all of those things that we're doing have an intention to be able to make a difference to their whole lives. Same even when we're doing literacy and numeracy ones for us, we would be hoping that, you know, if they're writing a sentence with an adjective, they're not just going to do it in English, but they might actually do it when they're doing history, or they might do it when they're writing a letter to someone or something like that outside of there. The next part, so once you've set your learning intention, which is done for you on your pages, your lesson plan, your greeting, I'm not going to go through that. I think everyone would have a good understanding of why you do your greeting. Again, if you've got a difficult class, maybe mark the roll outside the room to get them in a bit better. But other than that, I would suggest that what you're doing there is more than adequate.
Addison?
Yes?
I've got a question. You're talking about the lesson plan. Should we do before the class or after the class?
There we go. Bingo number one. Yeah. Try and plan that little one before you go. It's probably easier to do after because you've already done it. Yeah. We do call that backward napping, but it's not negotiable here. No, before. Yeah. Basically, if you've got it, it's an easier thing to do. It's easy. Like, if you change things throughout, like if you plan your lesson and then you kind of go, oh, God, that was shocking. I'm never doing that again, like role play. Mm-hmm. You can go back in and scribble on it and say, I'm not doing role play next time. I'm going to do a, you know, an activity that's at their desk by themselves and they're not touching anyone, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you can certainly update, change, whatever. But having it there to start with, definitely the bonus. Okay, so then we have the next part of the teaching phase, which is all about your intro and your, you know, what you're actually teaching, so your phases that you go through. There's a time frame down the side here that basically squeezes you into half an hour. Has anyone taught any of these lessons that are actually typed up yet? No one's actually had a crack at any of those?
No. First one.
You've had the first one? Yeah.
I have to come home and do it.
Yeah, I was just wondering like how it goes time-wise, because I think they're quite in-depth, but I think that's also to allow for the scope of the people who are reading it. It needs to be in-depth. But again, I'm not sure how it will go, fitting it all in, and time flies and things happen and kids are late and your half hour becomes 25 minutes before you even start. If I was ever going to do anything that I was going to leave out, I probably would be leaving out the recall of the previous lesson. Okay. Now, I would be devastated if my teachers didn't do it, but they're doing it every single day, all day. So I would be expecting that they're using the prior knowledge. Unless the prior knowledge is going to help you with your learning intention, I wouldn't be too stressed if I missed that bit out. It's useful to have, because again, it draws on what they knew last lesson in making sure that they're ready for the next one. So I'm not sure what comes after the recognising of the maras, but that next lesson that comes might need that recognition of the maras to be talked about before you go in. It kind of depends. So that's there in order to allow you to give kids an opportunity to retell what they've already learnt last lesson. And because it's a whole week ago, sometimes that might be necessary. So when you come into your introductions and stuff, the first part of explicit teaching is a clear goal. Setting learning goals is easy, inexpensive, and has a massive effect on how well they do at school. This is your intention again. The effect that goals have on achievement is large. It rivals the effect of socioeconomic status. So research has indicated over years that there are many factors that influence the way children learn. One of those factors is where they come from. okay, their socioeconomic background. So the reason the researcher is writing that in there is because they're basically saying not setting a learning intention or not having a focus for why you're doing something the way you're doing it has a greater effect on kids' learning than their socioeconomic background. Okay, so it doesn't matter where kids come from, whether they come from an affluent or a very poor family, their learning shouldn't be hindered as a result of that. However, everyone's learning will be hindered if you don't have an intention to your lesson, is basically the scenario. To have an impact on how well students do at school, you must write down your goals and you must do it correctly. The good news is it's not too hard to do. Lesson goals always explain what the students need to understand and what they must be able to do by the end of the lesson. Then you simply put these elements together, typically with a starting statement like the students must be able to, or learning intention as we called it here. When I did look at the recalling of previous knowledge, I would literally, and I think down here it's a 2-minute thing, I would spend no longer on that, because it can take, once kids start talking about what happened last week, it can then go on for another month, because when I left the classroom and I ran into a child and they were negative, suddenly you've ended up with a 20-minute conversation about the recall and you haven't made it any further. So it's something quick. It can often be that you just choose one child, just that one kid who you know will know it, number one, you're not going to have to probe with 9,000 questions. Bring the kid out the front, sit them in your seat and say, right, you've got 30 seconds to tell us what happened last lesson. What do you remember happened? Mm-hmm. Set the timer, 30 seconds, let's go, you're in the hot seat. So that's what we call the hot seat there. You might say, turn to a friend in the classroom and tell them in 30 seconds, it's all you've got, what happened in the last lesson and what you learned. And then the other person's going to have a go. And then you might just bring everybody back and say, three people, I want you to tell me what the other person that you spoke to learnt, not what you did. So that kind of think, pair, share stuff. You might just show a quick picture of what happened last time. So does anyone remember this? So it might be the stimulus that you use. So something really quick and something that's going to make it move quickly, but it might also re-spark some ignition in something that you did such a long time ago, because a week for a kid is like 10 years for us. It's a long time ago. Did I really do that? Yes, you did. A little quick brainstorm if you have to. So if it's kind of something that you really do need, then you might need to get some more input from lots of children. I was having a discussion with someone outside, I can't remember your name.
Jackie.
So I was having a discussion with Jackie outside and she was saying, what do you do about that kid that always wants to answer the questions? They're always the first, you know, I know, you know, and you're like, oh, I don't want to ask you again. Because they answer every single question all the time. And sometimes that's good if you want to move quickly, because you don't want to have to wait for the others to think. But at the same time, you also want everyone to have a go. And I was suggesting to her, some of my staff use, they just have a cup, you might use clip-lop bags or whatever, and on paddle pop sticks, they write every child in the class's name. So that at the lesson, whenever you're about to start a lesson, open up your clip-lop bag or your cup, take out a paddle pop stick, and you might say, Jackie, this question's for you. And then ask the question so that the kid knows it's them that has to concentrate on the question to begin with. So I actually have to listen now. And it gives everyone a chance. And then if you've, you know, asked six questions throughout the lesson, put those aside. And next time you come back, start with the new packet again. Put those kids aside till everyone's had a go. There are times when the kid that you pull out will not know the answer and it'll be driving you crazy. You've given them that wait time and nothing's happening. You might then call on that person who always knows the answer and say, can you help? You might be able to help Jackie sort that question out. What do you think you might be able to add? So it just gives everyone a chance to have a go. Okay, then your introduction. Asking questions to get the students thinking about the topic of the lesson. So you might just say, Maras. Who knows anything about Maras? Now, if you've got K1-2 together, and this is a kindy, I can't remember what lesson this is for whom. Oh, year four. So you might have 3, 4, 5, and 6 together. If you've got year threes, they probably won't know because it's probably the first time they've looked at it. Year four probably got a clue. 5s and 6s are sure to know. They're sure to know what they are. So you can actually allow them to be the introduction to your lesson. If you know, tell me something about it and share it with your peers. Sadly, kids learn better from their peers than they do from their teacher.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. It's a devastating thing, but it is. So quite often they will listen more to their peers, or they will have more of an option to do that. Because, you know, if they know and you know they know, don't you do the introduction, get them to. It also gives them a little bit of power in order to know what they're learning about. So, asking questions, showing pictures that relate to the lesson or topic. I know there are some beautiful pictures that you guys can show, and it might even be from the internet or something like that that you need to do that from. I guess that's kind of done in your own time. I don't know how much access you have to technology in the classrooms. You have some, yeah, you can use the interactive whiteboard if you want to. Excellent. So if you do have that, yeah, just a picture, just a stand back. So your introduction is not so much about you saying a lot. It's about you providing stimulus for the kids to then be able to drag on and go with. So it could be a picture. It might be telling a story. And I know in the scope and sequence that was written for you, there are lots of stories to be told. Right? There's lots of stories about Buddha's birth and all those kinds of things along the way that are stories. Kids love hearing stories.
Yeah.
They love it. They love to sit and they love to listen to a story because we haven't heard of it before, but it also allows them not to have to say much. It's a quiet time. It's a nice time to come in and start with a story. Real objects, they matter big time as well. Kids love having access to real objects. So if you are talking about Buddha or something like that and you take a little statue with you, I remember a scripture teacher at one of the schools I taught at, she used to come in and she would set up a little space every time she came in. And she was I think it might have been Catholic maybe. And she'd just have like a little table that she'd, you know, drag over or whatever, or someone's stool or whatever it might have been. And she'd just set up this little display of things. And the kids would enter and she'd always have something new on there. So they'd come in, they'd be like, oh, what has she got today? You know, they were so respectful of it because they knew it was her treasures. But at the same time, they were excited to see what was there. And it kind of set the scene for the lesson that she was having at the time. So bringing in real things, pictures, kids love photos that you're in. They love that. They love to see that you're a real person and you actually do this stuff. And I think he spoke about that, being a real person and showing that there is life outside of school. Videos and songs. I put the song in there because of the singing. I don't know how many songs there are. I don't know. Do you have like songs?
Yep.
And songs? Yes. Yeah,
yeah,
there are songs.
Yes.
Yeah, loads of that. Okay, so, you know, even if you're not a singer, on a cassette or on a phone usually now, it's probably download them and things like that, you can use that kind of stuff as well because kids love that. As soon as they get to sing or dance or things like that, you've got them in. So your introduction is really capturing. You just want to capture their attention and get them focused on what it is. They've already been told what their learning intention is, and you would probably even state that straight after your greeting. Straight after you said, now today we are learning to, or our learning intention of the day is to do this. Who remembers from last week what we talked about when it came to da-da-da-da? Okay, so you probably start that straight up. Okay.
Shall we bring that the last week's learning intention, just put on top of each other?
You can. If it flows.
Yeah.
If it's something that flows on, because again, as teachers all day, we can do that. So yeah, we might say yesterday we were learning to write a compound sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're writing a compound sentence with two adjectives.
Yes.
Do you remember
that's
yesterday?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you could definitely do if it
so
flows. If it's not something.
Or,
yes.
Like
and we
that,
did, I'm pretty sure in the scope and sequence, we did try really hard to make it flow a bit, didn't we? Like that it kind of started out as the birth and moved into different things. So it flowed quite nicely. So you might need it, to be fair. You might need to have that intention from the previous week as well. That might help with the prior knowledge bit as well, if you've got it there. Okay. The second essential ingredient of explicit teaching is show and tell. Kids love show and tell. They love to have a story from you about your life and how it's influenced you and what you've done. It's really quite funny. I go into a 5-6 class at the moment. They're not easy. pretty hard group and scare most casuals away. So rather than have the casual come and have to put up with that, I say, I'll take them. Let me get in there, because I don't get to teach very often, and that's why I became a teacher, because I love it. So to get in there and have a crack is great. It's really funny because when I leave, the only information they ever give back to their teacher is, oh, she told us another story. And I look at the teacher and I go, and we did the writing. Did you see the product? It was fantastic. They were great, you know, but that's their impression of what it is. I enter the classroom and they sit down on the floor and they say, are you going to tell us a story? I'm like, oh my gosh, you whinge about it every time I do. You say I tell too many stories. And they go, no, we love your stories. Tell us another story. So it's quite funny. They do love to hear what you've done in your life and show and tell what you're about, especially when you're not there very long. You know, these kids know me, so they know I'm a storyteller and I'll always have a story about something. And if I don't, I make it up, so it doesn't matter. We were talking about shark attacks the other day and I was in a boat where a shark was circling us. I've never been in a boat with sharks. Anyway, they don't know that. That's my bad karma. It's the bad karma will come back and get me, so I have to come here and do this stuff. But anyway, they love it. Like, they just love to think that you've been involved in the stuff that you're trying to get them to be able to do. So, you know, if I was teaching something about the maras and the negative stuff, I'd probably share something that I messed up once. Yeah, this is what I did. This is what happened to me. And I understand how you're going to go there. And suddenly they go, oh, she's real. Thank goodness she's real. She's not this perfect person that gets everything right. Sadly, my kids all know that. That's not the truth. So put simply, telling involves sharing information or knowledge with your students, while showing involves modelling how to do it. So, for example, if you were just telling the story of the time that you got it wrong, a negative Mara that influenced you, the most important thing then is to show how you fixed it. Because that's your intention, remember. We want them to recognise them, but we also don't want them to fall into the category of just doing it over and over and over again. We don't want them just to think that the Maras are fun to get naughty and to do things weirdly. But we want them to be able to see that it happens, but there's a way of fixing it. So we want them to tell your story, but show them what it is that allowed you to fix it, or the understanding that you have of it. Once you're clear about what you want your students to know and be able to do by the end of the lesson, you need to tell them what they need to know and show them how to do things that you want them to be able to do. So, for example, if you were in that particular lesson, you had to, maybe you want them to give you back, I can't remember what the next bit of the lesson was, the individual activity, oh, a worksheet, to complete the worksheet, overcoming Maras. Okay, and write a mantra. We all have Maras within us that we can overcome, at the bottom of the page. If I was teaching this lesson, I would do that. I would physically do it so that they could see that as I'm telling my story, I'm going to show you what you're going to be doing by the end of the lesson. I'm going to do it for you. So we model as we go along so that they have an exemplar, the best opportunity to see what the final result's going to look like, because you're doing it with them as you go. So you might state that one of yours, what is it? We all have Mara's help us overcome, the bottom of the page. All right, so you might be talking about how you disrespected somebody by not listening to them. Could be one that you draw on your own stuff, some things that are happening in the classroom at the time. If it's really disrespectful not to listen to somebody and I wasn't facing them when I was talking to them and I looked away and it made the person feel like I wasn't listening, rah, 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 rah. And you might be drawing a little picture of that on the board as you go, whatever you want the sample to be on the worksheet. And then at the bottom, but this is how I fixed it. This is what I did. And this is my mantra now, that I can make sure that I don't disrespect people by not looking at them when they're speaking. So if you've got something going on in the room, use it to your greatest advantage. If you've got someone rolling around the floor under the table, use that. I remember once when I was in year three and I went underneath the table when the teacher was talking to me, and all of a sudden someone put their chair in and it clipped my leg and I ended up with a big bruise on my leg. Make it up. Yeah. They don't know. But it's a nice way of using what's going on at the time to help you teach the lesson. And it's real. It's not something that's completely different and out there.
But but you have to remember it. You made it up because they will come back to
oh,
you.
Oh, they always come back. They always come back. I know. I think you always remember because you've made it up so well that they believe it in the end. You're like, wow, how good was that? Like my shark thing is hilarious. You know, the number of kids that came up and the teachers were like, oh my God, when were you in a boat that the shark was circling? I go, oh, it was this time. This one time at band camp, I always say. And go, yeah, we know what happens at band camp. Not much. So yeah, they do come back and you, yeah, they do believe. That's lovely, isn't it? It's nice to have that.
Afterwards, when they grow up, they look back.
Yeah, you lied to me about that. Yeah, maybe I did. Okay, so students actually need to know stuff in order to apply that knowledge. Explicit teaching involves telling them new stuff and showing them new things to do. So when we are explicitly trying to teach something, we have to show and tell. Just keep that in your head. Show them how, tell them how, explain to them, do the model at the same time, whatever it might be that's going to get you what you want for your learning intention of the day. However, you don't want to spend your entire lesson telling kids stuff. I think that's where I go wrong. I just keep telling and telling and telling. So it's vital to focus on things that genuinely they need to know. Okay, so that particular conversation, the reason I told the story about the shark was at the time the Year 5 Sixes were writing a persuasive text about whether or not we should have shark nets on beaches and whether or not they even do anything, you know. So they had to decide whether we should or we shouldn't. So there was an intent to my story that, you know, eventually we would get around to the idea of, you know, so if we had shark nets, what would that do? Will it prevent them from really doing anything or, you know, do other animals get caught up in it, whatever, whatever. So it kind of went on. So all the story was to motivate the thought process and to get them interested in the topic that we're about to do. Because persuasive writing, they hate. They hate it because they have to have arguments and they have to be able to support their arguments. They don't want to do that. They want it to be quick and over. Let me make up a story about sharks. No, only I'm allowed to do that. You're not. So to do this, have another look at your learning goals. So always make sure you're reflecting yourself back, because I could have very well gone off on a tangent from the shark story and they could have been writing a made-up story about a time a shark ate you. But the intent of the lesson was not that. It was to get them to think about persuasive writing around should we have shark nets or not. So I had to keep that in my head. Don't go too far left, because the right's really hard to come back to. And then you have to start all over again. You don't have time. So your lesson goal helps you to know what you need to tell children. This may include sharing ideas and facts and explaining associated vocabulary. Now, I guess that's a challenge for you in that the vocab that they're learning might not be common. It might not be familiar. And even if you're teaching children who aren't speaking English very well at the moment, that's a massive challenge. So be aware of the vocab. We are fully aware of it all of the time in our teaching, and kids' vocab is so much poorer now than it was 20 years ago. And it's because they're not reading good quality texts young, they're playing on iPads young, and they're engaged, so parents think that's great, and they're quiet, and they're not annoying, and it's easy. Hello, I'm one of them. Yeah, to dinner with an iPad. Who used to do that? Never took an iPad to dinner. But now, if you don't take an iPad to dinner, you're crazy, because your kids are going to mess up and they're going to be naughty, and at least they're going to be quiet and sit beside you and not do anything. So unfortunately, lots of the vocab that we've taken out of their lives, they still need. So be aware that when you're giving that, you're really explicit with the vocab that you want. So for you, the word Mara, and what does recognise mean? Like, what do they have to be able to do to recognise the Maras? What does recognising mean? Does it mean that they have to be able to list 10 of them? Do they have to be able to draw a picture of one? Do they have to, or just know
just
that
know.
It's
know.
The, yeah, just know that it's a negative thing. No, you're right, Dan. Sure.
Some of the names of the Buddha, I can't even pronounce it myself, but I used the Google translation. And the Google translation do have a different pronunciation from the video that I saw in Nanton Temple. Then I get confused. What would happen if a student asked me, you probably pronounce it wrong? But then from the Nanton Temple, they pronounce it this way. And then the Google...
Just blame Venerable Lee.
pronunciation is
I would.
Different.
Just say it's hurtful.
I don't know what to say. I have that question in my mind. I don't know which one to follow. And I try to look, like, if I have to learn a particular name, then which way is the best way to learn?
Which
right
name
pronunciation?
You want to learn?
Yeah.
There's so many names.
There's so many.
Which one you have problem?
I think
there's not many in our class.
A lot of Buddhist terms so can be pronounced very differently because it's not according to our English
pronunciation. I understand.
Yeah,
that's
maybe
why
follow
I used
to the Bali or Hindu.
Yes, different Sanskrit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sanskrit sometimes.
That probably is it. I know none of them, so I can't
help
you.
So I think we should learn.
Yeah, but learn from which resources.
Yeah.
Can
you give us an example?
Yeah.
Like,
see, Prince Siddhartha. That's the basic one.
This is how you say
it.
The in the Google translation is slightly different.
I think it's, you know, it was interesting because what the guy said at the beginning there about learning along with the children, like, because they will do that. Kids will pick up every single time you get something wrong and they'll go, that's not right. Well, that's not how my mum says it, or I didn't learn that last year from so-and-so scripture teacher. They will do that all of the time. And I think it's one of those opportunities where he says, kids never see us learn. You know, how many kids do we have here today from your classes? None. How many kids come to professional learning from my school? None. They don't come to those sort of events. I've started to invite them to different things along the way, but that's just, you know, for me to get them to see that we are learners all of the time. But I think that would be a perfect opportunity to say, well, it's interesting that you say that. Like, take it as a positive and say, it's interesting that you say that because I'm struggling with that too. I'm learning it here and I'm hearing it here, and you might say it differently and your mum might say it differently. I wonder why. I wonder why we're all doing that. Yeah, I wonder why we're doing that. And yes, you want it to be right. You want your vocab that you're sharing with them to be correct and the pronunciation that you are aware of. But at the end of the day, really, whether you say Siddhartha or any other way, I mean, I'm not even probably getting it right now myself. I'm making it up. However you might say it, does it change the person that it is? Not so much. I mean, the meaning behind that person doesn't get changed with the way his name is said as such. So I'd probably pick the battles I could pick and not worry about the ones that I couldn't. So I don't know, maybe there is a particular way of saying things.
I don't know, but don't trust Google Translate.
Oh, really? I've trusted that for years. God knows what my parents are getting.
Go and seek help from your grand temple and talk to the other teachers that are co-teaching with you.
Yeah.
You can't solve.
Yeah. Look, to be fair, I've grown up a Catholic my whole life and I don't practice anymore, but that's another story for another day. But there are many names in the Bible. Many names in the Bible that you look at and you're like, whoa, someone tell me that, you know, and you'll ask a priest and he'll tell you one way, and then suddenly you'll talk to someone else and they'll go, no, no. You don't accent the E, you accent the I, you know, and you're like, oh, gosh, well, which one's which, you know? And at the end of the day, whatever comes out of my mouth is the best option I've got. So it's too late once it's out. It's way too late. I can't change it when it's there. So, you know, I think in lots of ways that's a challenge, no question, but I think people understand why you would get that wrong. I don't know that you'd get into much trouble.
Would that be seen as a positive by the children?
They would love that.
So, but if
they would love if you don't know.
But if they actually see that you're learning along with them, that...
Yes,
yeah, okay.
They love it. They love it. And I do that to the older kids especially all of the time. They'll say to me, well, you know, how does an egg hatch and how does the chicken know to peck its way out? I don't know.
I'm logical.
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. But let's find it out together. Let's have a look. That's the bonus of the internet. And the whole new not having to look up an encyclopedia that doesn't have it. But, you know, that's the bonus. And kids love it when you learn with them. And at the end of it, you say, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. They love to know that they know something that you didn't, or they've asked a question around something that you didn't know. And it's not to be horrible. It's just, and it's also a nice way of showing them how you research stuff. You know, and no, I don't just jump straight on and go, oh, Wikipedia, let's try that and see what it says, like Google Translate. You know, you can't trust it. But let's have a real look. Like, what is this person saying? What did this research say? And, you know, what did that book tell us about the egg and why the chicken's able to pick its way out? Who knows? Yeah, so I think it's a beautiful opportunity to grab hold of that. All right. Okay, so showing students how to do things involves modelling both the visible action and the underlying thinking. Now, this is a tricky bit, and this is what we try to teach teachers to do often. You model your inner thinking using a think aloud strategy. Okay, so if you're wanting them to do something, so you physically want to get something from them, talk aloud about how you might do it in your own head. So for example, if it was that you want them to complete the worksheet overcoming maras by writing the mantra, we all have maras within us, but we can overcome them, at the bottom of the page. They are then to put across through the speech bubble that they are letting Mara take over, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So there's a lot to do in that space. So rather than just saying, I want you to go back and I want you to do da-da-da-da-da, you might say, oh, if I was having to do this, this is how I would do it. I would start by drawing a picture of myself in the middle. Draw the picture of yourself, stick figure, doesn't matter what it looks like. And the speech bubble, and the writing, and the cross through it. You know, I'm not going to say that negative word anymore. I'm going to be positive and have this down the bottom. So you're actually, what you would normally just do without thinking, you're talking aloud about. So any process in the teaching cycle that you want them to be able to do explicitly, talk about it. Let them know the steps you would take in order to get that done. And that's why doing it along the way will solve all those problems when they go back and go, oh, I don't remember what to do. You've only got 10 minutes. We don't have time to answer these questions again. Just do it. If they've got an example, then they're right to go. So thinking aloud and talking to them about what they do. Not an easy thing to do, but you will certainly get better at it. Where am I up to? Helping students to self-verbalise the steps involved in a task has a larger impact on their subsequent achievement. So actually saying, now those kids who you know are going to go back and say, I don't get it, I don't know what to do, before they even go back, you three, stay here. You know them, the ones that never complete anything. Stay here. What do you need to do? Oh, I need to go back and draw a picture of myself. Yes, you need to draw a picture of yourself. Then what do you need to do? Oh, I need to put a speech bubble with a word in it. Right, so you're drawing a picture of yourself, you're putting a speech bubble with your name in, or whatever it is, a word in there, and you're writing the mantra I have on the board on the bottom of your page. Can you tell me again before you go back what you need to do? Draw a picture, put a word, mantra at the bottom. Good job, back you go. They need to be able to do that, because otherwise, guaranteed, there'll be at least half a dozen who don't. So that pretty much moves you through this section here where you've got your whole class discussion, yeah, right? So you have spent the whole time in that part explaining what you want them to be able to do when they go back to their seat. Now, here it's saying 10 minutes, perfect time. I wouldn't take longer. That's telling your story, showing and telling, getting them to tell you back what they have to do. All of that stuff is going to happen in 10 minutes. That's it. So you've got to think about how you deliver that information. Sometimes the story can take 4 or 5 minutes. So that means your thinking aloud is going to take a whole lot less. Be quick. If they've got a sample there, 10% will copy it. That's okay. 90% won't. That's even better. So they'll want to do their own as well. So there'll be those kids that copy, and that's okay, because the copying is at least getting something down versus absolutely nothing at all, which is what they probably would do if you didn't have the sample. Oh. So once you've done all of that bit, you're now up to your individual activity, and it's saying 5 minutes here is all you've got for that. So you really do want to set them up for success, because now it's their turn to go from you. So they've already spent a good maybe 20 minutes on the floor with you. It's time to get them off there, because they will go crazy. Even for half an hour on the floor is hard work. Even if you've been teaching a long time, half an hour on the floor is hard work. So 20 minutes, back they go to their seats. Again, think about how you're going to do that behaviour management-wise. What's that going to look like? Is it going to be everyone go back? Or is it going to be these five children, back you go, these five children, back you go, whatever it might be. You'll know, because you know your kids better than I do. Plenty of practice. We need to give kids plenty of practice if we want them to know something. So even though you might feel like you're going over the same thing again, and I feel like I've now said about the recognizing that Maras are a negative state of mind that many times, it's crazy. Go back. Go back again. Remember today. Today's lesson is about recognizing that negative Maras have an effect on your life, whatever it might be. Don't forget, when you go back to practice, this is what we're doing today. We want to have this in our heads by the time you're finished. So it's about number four now. Number four, revisit of the intention. They know that's what you want from them. You've shown them an example during your teaching phase. You're ready to go. Now it's their turn to have a go. So the final part of explicit teaching is practice. Practice makes perfect, and you should allow plenty of time for your students to practice what you have taught them. Unfortunately for you, plenty of time doesn't exist. You don't have plenty of time. You have a short amount of time. But the bonus is that if you've stuck to the intention, it's not a really difficult concept that would take them 10 lessons to get. They should be able to get that in a lesson. If not, more than likely, the next lesson would be asking them to be able to do the same thing. So if we want to reinforce something because we know it's too hard, we would probably take longer than one lesson to do it in. You should start with some guided practice. So this is for those kids. The guided practice is for those kids who, you know, no matter how many times you've asked them to go back and do that, they will still go, I don't know, when they get there, or they'll sit and do nothing. There are, though, 90% of kids that can go now. You've done everything you possibly could in your explicit teaching time. You've gotten an excellent resource there. It's all explicit. They know what they have to do. When you go back to do your guide, your individual activity, 90% will be able to do it. Those that don't let them go. Don't let them go back, because it will be a waste of your time and a waste of theirs. They'll just disrupt everybody, because even though 5 minutes is a short time, you can do a lot in 5 minutes if you're a naughty kid. Loads of stuff. So keep them. Keep them on the floor with you. Everyone else go. You don't need me. Be on your boat. Off you go. Sometimes we keep kids too long and we spend too much time not allowing them to have that opportunity to practice on their own. They don't need us all the time. Let all those go. Just keep the ones who you know are either going to cause grief or that you can't fit at a table to do their work. You might have to have them on the floor with you anyway. Choose those kids wisely and keep them with you. So the guided practice, this involves giving your students time to practice new things, and that's why we have it in there. We want them to have their own time. The individual activity is really important, and we need that individual activity to be challenging enough for the kids who are going to finish it in 2 minutes, but not too hard that those kids who can't do it sit there and go, I'm out. So it's hard. Choosing an individual activity is not easy. It's easy to pick your teaching practice, because you're doing it, so you'll do it to your level, whether it be hard or easier. When it comes to that, you've got to really think about who the kids are. I think when we brainstormed maybe at the initial session this year some activities, there were some really good ones. You people are clever at that. You do a good job of talking about your individual activity for kids to have a go at. You've used lots, you know what works and you know what doesn't, so that's great. Once your students seem to be doing okay on their own, it's time to check their work. So you might just do that walk, just a quick walk, give some feedback. Remember, your intention is your feedback. Oh, I can see that you're able to recognise what one of the Maras is. Good job. Oh, and what's your Mara that you're recognising, so-and-so? Because they've already written it there and you know it's there. So anyone who's not doing it will get a prompt from their peers anyway. You'll be able to give them a clue. Here's one, try this one. That kind of stuff. That's the independent, we won't worry about that. So explicit teaching in a nutshell. Be clear about what you want your students to know and be able to do at the end of the lesson. And that's what's really important in your lesson planning that you'll be doing tomorrow. Think about, what do I want them to be able to do and know at the end of the lesson? Some things might be do, some things might be no. Tell children what they need to know and show them what they need to do. They need to know what you want. When I talked about, and we had a little look at success criteria in that last video, we go one step further than a learning intention and we have the success criteria. So for you to be successful, these are the three things you need to have done at the end. So for your kids in this particular one, if I was off the top of my head coming up with success criteria, I would probably say that they are able to recognise a Mara, illustrate it, and then write a mantra in reply. Okay, they would be the three things I'm looking for. They're the three success criterias that I would set. You don't have to have that. It's way too small amount of time to have a success criteria. But be thinking about that when you pick your assessment. What do I really want them to be able to do in that intention? Three things. Then I'm going to use that for assessment, which will allow me to give appropriate feedback as I wander around. And give them time to practice what they've learnt. They kind of like that time where you're not preaching to them. I've got a list here, and it's not easy to see, so I will have it for you sent electronically so that you can see it tomorrow. But these are all individual activities that you might like to choose from. So there's one here, pre-test with a partner, so you just sit with the partner and tell me your mantras, whatever they might be. If you didn't want them to, you don't, your lesson's going to take longer and you're not going to have time for them to complete a sheet like that. I mean, 5 minutes to get that done is even tricky. You might have it set up a whole lot more explicitly than saying a blank sheet, for example. I don't know what they look like, I'm making that up. It might already have, you know, the sentence at the bottom, especially for those little kids who can't write it, and all they have to do is put the word. Yeah, that kind of stuff. So whichever mantra it is that they're going to use. So yeah, there's lots of those. Again, if I send it, you'll actually be able to use it versus how tiny it is on the sheet there.
Stand up, sit down,
thumbs up, thumbs down. You know, you might just ask questions if you don't have a lot of time, you know. Thumbs up if you think that being selfish is a mara. Thumbs down if you think that, you know, forgiveness is a mara, that kind of stuff. So it can be that simple if you don't have a lot of time. Secret answers, response cards, think, pair, share again, quick writes, one word splash, quick draw, gallery walks, A to Z summaries, 3-2-1s, find your match. There's loads and loads and loads of individual activities that you can pick from. Is that making sense?
So you mean we actually could take them to our gallery in Nankin Temple, some of the kids?
No, I don't know what that one is.
You say have a gallery walk.
This is a great activity that will keep your students engaged and their energy levels high. After having your students write or draw their responses and have a gallery walk to allow students to walk around the room and see other kids' responses. It's not that classy.
Okay.
And you've only got 5 minutes. Good luck with that in the gallery up here. So that would be, if they came up with their maras, for example, you might display them just really quickly, get a bit of blue tack, chuck it on the wall around the room, and then all the kids go past and have a look at what people's mantras are going to be for the week. It kind of holds them a bit accountable as well. Someone else knows what it is. So that's a gallery walk. Coming to this gallery.
Oh, no.
Sorry, it's not that classy. And then the final part of your lesson plan that you're going to be constructing tomorrow is, of course, your conclusion.
Ah.
Now, quite often, if we don't get to conclusion, oh well, we ran out of time. We tried to get there and we didn't get there. This is your best bit. This is the bit where you get to see if this even happened. Okay, so your conclusion matters, and it's only a 5 minute, is that five? Yep, put a light on there. A 5 minute conclusion, try and get it done. Even if you have to cut short their individual activity and they can take it home maybe to finish it, sometimes I guess you allow them to do that. The conclusion matters. So it goes without saying that you should never end a lesson without introducing something new just to leave your students hanging till the next lesson. Mm-hmm. So you want to be able to say to them, today we've learnt, back we go again to the intention, today we've learnt about this, next week we're actually going to be learning about how we can help others understand their maras or whatever it might be, in the next lesson. Again, from your scope and sequence, you should be able to get that information about where to next.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to end a lesson is to give students some kind of review activity so that they can see the progress they've made in just one lesson. Look what we did today. We started by knowing that we needed to be able to recognise the maras. Every single one of you has been able to recognise a mara. When I wandered around the room or when we did our gallery walk, we could see that everybody did Amara. Everyone was able to recognize at least one. Are there lots of them? Can I open that up? Doesn't really doesn't matter.
Heaps of them.
You can just ignore
them. So many Maras.
My limited knowledge.
Yeah.
But anyway, I probably should read up before I come. So you know, you might be able to do that. So, you know, let's have a think about what we did in the whole lesson. We did this, we did this, we did this, and you were able to recognise this, this, and this, and you're able to state one, and you're going to work on it this week. And next week, can't wait to see you because this is what we're going to do, that kind of stuff. One of the most common and easiest ways, easiest to implement, is simply taking the last 5 minutes of your class to ask your students, what have you learned today? Mm. What have you learned today? So that's a really nice feedback to you to know whether the activities were too hard or too easy, or whether or not your intention was clear enough or wordy enough for them or not wordy enough for them. Okay, so it's a nice feedback to you about what's happened today. What have you learned? If they say nothing, then you know you've got to start all over again because that didn't work. They don't usually do that. Notice here that you're not the one telling them what they've learned. You're getting it from them. They're actually supplying you. They may give you a list of new words or say they learnt to speak about what they've done in the past or they do in the future, whatever. Students may pick up something they've missed earlier. Also, it's important to speak in functional ways. For example, not say they learned to use the simple present, but rather they've learned to speak about their habit schedule. So basically what they're saying there is... you don't want them just to say, oh, I learned that I shouldn't be naughty. Okay, that I shouldn't swear, that I shouldn't hit someone. Because that's not the real intent.
Mm.
You want them to be able to use the word Mara. You want them to be able to be, you know, coming with more than that. So you might need to probe another question to that child. Yeah, they've learned something. They've done something on the right path. But they're going to go away with, I learned how to punch a kid today.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than what you really want. So you want to redirect that, and you also want to give the other kids the opportunity who might be sitting there thinking the same thing some time to clarify, well, that's not actually what you learned today. You didn't just learn that you need to punch a kid. You actually learned that those negative maras can have a big impact on your life and how you can be positive learning from those things that you do wrong.
So leave a positive note on their mind.
Yeah, I think, well... I don't know that any Buddhist lesson would ever not be have a positive moral to it. I'd be hoping not. So, again, going back to your intention, you want them to be able to walk away with that.
To understand,
to recognise the negative Mara, da-da-da-da-da. So you never want them to go thinking they've learnt something completely different to what they have. And unless you get a chance to conclude, you're not going to know that. You really won't know. So you won't know whether or not they've picked up the things that they were meant to pick up. This is just another example. Again, you can have a look at that tomorrow. But, you know, you've got 60 seconds to speak about something that you've learned about today, and you can have your little phone on and go, right, you've got 60 seconds. Five people, 60 seconds. Here are my five people. Don't let them volunteer. Pick them. Pick your five people. 60 seconds, that's all you've got to tell us what you did today. They'll probably finish in 10 or 15. So it won't take the whole 60. But if you give them a time frame, they'll actually come prepared to say something versus not at all. And you can even set that sort of thing up before the end of the lesson. So you might say in the independent phase, Joe, Bill, Sam, Kathy and Jane, at the end of this lesson, you're going to be my five reporters. You're going to come up and you're going to be the ones who are going to... deliver the information that we learned today. But again, in your lesson plan, there's space for you to write your conclusion. So you can actually have that set up if it is something that you want like that or it's something different. Ah, that was another little thing. Another really important part of lesson planning is the feedback and reflection time. So you're starting to lose it. I don't usually talk for this long in one day. Surprising, I know, because I never seem to shut up. But
we're your audience.
Yeah, you are.
You're performing for us today.
I'm performing.
You're very special.
Performing well. What's interesting about the reflection time is actually giving yourself the opportunity to get feedback for yourself, like to sit back and go, how did that go today? Teachers are hopeless at that. Because we only ever pick up the bad things we did. We only ever say, oh, I should have said, or I should have done, or the kid did this, and it was negative there. And actually have a really good think about the content of your lesson, not so much your performance or what happened during, because sometimes you're not in control of that, but just have a think about, as a person, what did I get out of this today? How did I go in delivering that content today? And most often, you'll tick boxes. And the reason you might not tick boxes is because the activity didn't suit, didn't match what you were doing with your kids, or that you just haven't gone in feeling like you were going to crack it today anyway. But giving yourself that time to reflect is nice. And it might just be a thought on the way home in the car. Make sure, though, if it's something that didn't work, write it down. Because you'll forget in a week. You're busy. You will forget in a week. You don't just do scripture. So, you know, there's lots of other things that you do in a week as well. So just jot it down on there. Quickly jot it down. Even you go back and sit in the car for 2 minutes, jot it down all over and go, no, never doing that again. That was hideous. So next time you plan your lesson before you teach it, novel, you'll be able to remember not to do role play. Okay?
Write down the positive as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. If something worked really well, you want to do that thing again. Mm-hmm. And you want to remember to do that thing again. You go, gosh, the gallery walk was fantastic. Remind me, underline it, do again, you know, whatever. Scribble all over it because it's your lesson plans anyway. At the end of the day, there'll be masters, but you can do what you want to yours,
yeah,
to make it yours.
I used to do just write down immediately after the school. I drove out of the school,
yep,
and I pull out, pull over,
yep,
on the side of the street, and then get my phone on, and anything that's a significant moment,
yes,
good or bad or whatever, I could remember.
Yes, even to remember about a kid,
yes,
you know, like,
yes,
if there's something
the
that worked, yes, that worked that didn't work last time,
that's
you think,
right,
oh, that nailed it, I need to remember to do that, because a week's a long time.
It is.
A lot happens, and you suddenly get back and go, oh, I forgot to do that for that kid because of that and whatever else.
Yeah.
Especially if there's someone you're trying to build a good relationship with, you want to kind of keep those positive bits happening nicely for them.
On the iPhone, you can put that recording,
yes, record your own voice.
And I just talk. You just say whatever in your mind.
That's a good idea.
Class and then just
save
it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it on there.
Voice
you probably
memo.
Don't need to ever give it to anybody. Yeah, it's your decision. No, that's right. You know, I don't want to share that with anybody. So things like having a discussion, having an interview with someone, setting some questions, a journal, a log, whatever works for you. We've been trying to get teachers to do this for 20 years, really. And I was one of the ones that used to buck the system and go, God, I can't write about it again. I'm done. I'm over that list. I don't want to do it again. But my gosh, the value is tenfold on taking 10 seconds to actually do it. So I had to go there. We are literally down to 10 minutes again. I thought we might have had a little bit of extra time, but you might want to do this before or have a think about it tonight even. I can leave all the paper if you want to keep that and you can have the textures. They're nothing amazing. But just having a think about, in the last term, what worked and what didn't work. You know, what made things work and what made them not work. Because tomorrow when you start doing your lessons again, it will most often be probably around your whole class activity. You individuals probably worked okay. Some of them may not have worked as beautifully. Some of them may have taken too much time. So they're the things to think about, you know, which ones were just too long and was too hard, and which ones didn't I set up well enough that the kids just had to do 5 minutes worth of work, remembering it's only 5 minutes, if you've even got that by the time they come in and settle. The teaching phase is the bit that you will probably have the things that were successful and those that weren't. Have a think about those tonight before you start doing your plans tomorrow. And if you do, I was basically going to get you into little groups of three and just to share some of the things that worked and some of the things that you would never ever do again. So if we'd had time. Yeah, well, I think sometimes too there are just things that you just should never do again. Yeah, there are just those opportunities, like those lessons. If I have a quick think about one, let me think about a time. Mine just hasn't worked and I'll never do it again. Oh, I know. I decided once that for art, we would do ink blowing. Okay, so it was fantastic. It looked amazing. It was on sort of like that nice art paper that's rough on one side, so it just splatters nicely, all beautiful, all done, all nice. Yep, lovely. What I didn't factor in was that year one kids couldn't all blow, that some of them would suck. So they're there doing their art, some of them are blowing and doing the most beautiful art, and next minute I get three kids covered in blue, green and purple ink all over their face because they're rather than... I will never, ever do that lesson again with year one kids, you know, like it was just one of those things that I either didn't explain what it's like to blow out of a straw, presumed completely that year one children would know the difference between sucking up a straw and blowing out of one. But reality is, in a pop-up, they do all the sucking, they don't do a lot of blowing, so loads and loads of that, and it was just everywhere. It was, and then I'm like, oh my God, is that poisonous? You know, I'm checking bottles and carrying on trying to get it off their mouth and teeth and calling parents and oh dear God, absolute nightmare. I will never do it again. So there are things that you just go, nah, not touching it ever again with my life. But there are things that you can just get better at. Yeah, I might need to explain that a little bit better. I might need to choose that better.
There's a full along coloring. The way.
Yes.
You can still do it for year one.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's right. Yeah, get pencils. Don't use ink. There was lots of morals to that story, really. I had loads of them by the end. It was just all too late. But, you know, I think you've done an amazing job for term one coming up with all of that with, you know, not a degree in education. And certainly not in lesson planning as well. But I hope that's added value to what you already know and has allowed you to have, yeah, a bit of a think about what you do in that process. I think, if anything, tomorrow, really focus on your whole class part there. The rest you can kind of tweak and change as you go, but those bits are the bits you want to get right. And does your individual activity make that happen? Your learning intention, does it make it happen? No,
so
you're right.
This lesson plan, so actually, so we are teaching different schools.
You are.
So we have so many teachers here.
Mm-hmm.
So properly we are in a pair, two of us, we teaching one class.
Yes.
So this lesson plan should be make according to the teacher.
Very much.
So then
I think
Venerable will receive a lot from us. So different school, different teachers, the student will receive all different. Because different teacher, maybe they use different way to interpret the same topic.
Sure, absolutely. And I think that's where the idea of coming up with these is a great idea, because, yes, everyone will have a different sway on it, and even when you've got one, you'll still do it differently.
Yeah.
Like I've actually written...
Class,
yeah,
same class.
Absolutely.
So
I've written lesson plans with teachers. Like we've actually come up with a lesson together and then gone and taught it and videoed it, and the three of us teach it differently. Even though we've come up with a lesson together, you know, we've actually said this is what we want to do, but the way we deliver it is different every time, and that's okay. I think the most important thing about coming up with this set of particular lessons by the end of the year is so that the consistency remains the same, so that you're not, you know, kind of losing the intention, which is easy. I used to do it all the time, losing the intention and going off onto something that's got nothing to do with what your outcomes are, because at the end of the day, the temple is responsible to make sure that it's all taught in the scope that it's taught in. But the way you do it, yeah, it probably will be different. The nice thing about it will be that you won't have to do so much preparation at home. You know, that if there is a role play in there, for example, and you go, oh, dear God, not that group, then you might have to say, I'm not doing role play. Like, I've tried with those kids and it will be an all-in brawl and it's going to take me 25 minutes to sort out and I've got two. So the teacher's going to take it over and she's going to be cranky and everyone's going to be annoyed. I'm not doing role play. I'm actually going to do a worksheet that I know will work with my kids, whatever. That bit doesn't matter so much. It's getting this bit the same. And I guess in a way, getting the actual teaching phase in the same kind of way, that everyone's getting delivered the same information.
My suggestion is if you are a new starter, so when you first start of teaching, it's better for you to follow it because it's got very good logic sequence.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much like a model activity. We've modeled, you know, we've shown you how to do it, how to deliver a lesson. And once you experienced, you can come up with your own lesson plan. But again, so you have to make sure that the learning outcome and the indicators are covered.
The main item.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
So
that's
because a lot of teachers are coming from a non-teaching background and they're extremely busy, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So
after this year, we understand that. Not now.
No. So the reason why we start to develop this teacher's manual is to give you more support.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of you here will need...
You're busy,
and also because, for instance, like I teach year 1, 3, and 4, that means I need to come up with 2 lesson plans.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because they're completely different level.
Mm. You got hours of work in there.
That's right.
But in one class or different class?
Huh?
They all in one class.
Different class.
Yeah. You might need to have a look. For example, there are
different days.
We've
not
got K to 2, year 3, year 4, year 5, and year 6. So
okay.
maximum 5 lesson plans for each topic.
Yep.
So my suggestion that you have a look at all the 5 lesson plans before you go in and teach the same topic.
Oh.
So you know how
it depends.
So sometimes because you have to differentiate your curriculum.
Mm.
And then
absolutely.
Say this year you might get a year 6 student, but that student has never done any Buddhist literature before. So maybe he, although he's a year 6 student, he's in terms of the level, I mean the proficiency of understanding of Buddhism, it's due K-2 maybe. So so this 5 lesson plans will need to be you have to take a close look at them and then decide which activities. So you can grab a little bit from
each one
and
a
then
nice
make a
manual.
New one. So as Alison has mentioned, it's a working document.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So for a school that start the coming terms, so we can actually start with the first week rather than week 8 because
yes,
we need to start
that's
from
correct.
The beginning. We don't need to follow other school, whatever they have up to, because...
Yep. You do it yourself, yeah. Mm. And that will come from your scope and sequence because that's already done for the whole year.
Mm.
So you can go to term 2, week 1 tomorrow, for example, in the scope and sequence and say, in K-2 we're learning about, I don't know, one of the acts of goodness.
Mm.
And in week 2 we're learning about the next one. In week 3 we're learning about the next one. So what will my lessons look like over that? Because unfortunately we don't have
But you have to make sure that all the ideas and all the lessons are built upon and ideas are flowing. So this week you're talking about the birth of the Buddha. So next week you start to talk about Mara. So there's
I'm asking because we don't start at the same time.
Yeah.
So we will
Some
follow
people are 5 weeks behind. You follow the scope.
Follow the program instead of
Correct.
Following other scope.
That's
yeah, don't worry about anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You just follow your own scope. Because I think I was talking at lunchtime and the lady who had to go, she was saying that, you know, her school, her school didn't start scripture till week 5.
Mm.
So on the scope and sequence, she's already
behind.
5 weeks behind what the sequence is asking her to do. So there's no point her racing on to term 2 if they're still trying to work out who Buddha is, which is like term 1.
Yeah,
so that's challenging.
There's another question I want to ask. Because in our school, we don't start until week 3.
Yeah.
So by the time, up to the last week, we only up to week 7.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
So the middle after week 7, I can't just hurry up to finish it.
Yes.
So next time I start week 8.
Yep.
And continue
pretty much. Just keep going. Yeah. Because the sequence is more important than the time frame as such. Because you don't want to go on to the next thing if they don't know that bit. I think, and that happens in schools all of the time. Like honestly, even with us, you know, we'll get to the end of a term and go, wow, like a half of that wasn't even taught, or a 3 weeks of that wasn't even taught, and we can't go on to the next bit till we get that bit right. Interruptions happen, you know. You can guarantee if an event's going to happen, it's always on Scripture Day. My Scripture teachers hate me for that. I don't think about it, and it happens. And you also finish early at the end of the year. Like you might finish around week 8. Usually because the last 2 weeks are hellish in schools anyway, so you don't want to be there. So, you know, there's even 5 weeks, the first 3 and the last 2, that we've planned in the scope and sequence for that you may not even teach. But there could be a time when you teach a lesson that doesn't take the whole time. And you think, man, that's way too easy. I can fit both of them. I can do week 8 and 9 in week 1 of term 2, that kind of thing, to summarise it a bit, if you want to keep up. But the nice thing is the scope and sequence is so sequential that if you don't get it in K, in kindergarten, you're going to get it in year one. And if you don't get it in year three, you'll pick it up in year four. So it's not completely, you know, different every single year, that if you don't do that, there's no way you're going to be able to do that. It kind of flows nicely and crosses over a little bit.
So what you mean next year, exactly the same?
Yeah. Yes, that stays. That stays exactly the same now forever.
Forever.
Your scope and sequence stays forever until there's a review done of it. So in our schools, for example, if we do a scope and sequence like that for science, we do it every three. So every 3 years we review it. Sometimes it changes, sometimes not. It stays the same. So if things are in there that you go, wow, that just was ridiculous, there was no way, it didn't work time frame wise and it didn't work in the year and it was messy and whatever, then we would review that in 5 years' time to go, or over the 5 years, and go, let's never do that again. That kind of stuff. But generally speaking, that stays, that won't change. So that's why this, getting this right and having the feedback on this, is going to be so vital, because that's going to support it for 5 years.
Well, next year we can,
you'll have it. You'll actually have the whole thing. Hopefully. As long as nobody goes anywhere. Key players can't leave.
But then what about the feedback from the students? If they have to sort of listen to it repeatedly every year, so how do they feel about it?
Well, it changes. So right from K to 6, the change happens throughout the year. So in kindergarten, they might learn, I don't know, the life of Buddha and the three goodness bits, right? Then in year 1, they might learn about the Maras. Then in year 2, they might learn about, give me another thing that's exciting that you might want to learn about. Something different. So they're building on the knowledge that they've had, but it's different every year. Like you might add another thing in. Yeah, the five precepts might come up, and you might do one of those over 10 weeks time, one every fortnight. So that by the time they get to year 6, if they've been in Buddhist scripture from kindergarten, they've learned everything they could possibly learn.
So how do you cater for students who have been in the class and students who are new to the class?
Yes, that's hard. And that's, yeah, Venerable was mentioning that before. The best option is to go back. Because if they don't understand the life of Buddha, the precepts and everything else are going to mean nothing. They'll be like, why? But why, but why? You know, and I guess I learnt that the most here. I brought my daughter down to learn to meditate. We were just going to do the meditation. Then we decided, no, we may as well do the whole class. It's an hour trip. We may as well make it worth it. Let's do the class as well. I would be devastated if I had only done the meditation now, because without the class, that meant nothing. You needed to understand why and what you were doing in the meditation that made it important to do it. So the same thing there. There's no point getting a new kid in year 6 and teaching about the precepts if they don't know what the life of Buddha is, or priests, whatever they are.
Precepts,
thank you. So I would, and that's not easy, that's really hard, but it might be that, you know, while you're teaching the bit there to the other kids, the precepts to the other kids, you might be able to sit with that kid when they all go back and do their individual and say, right, what's your understanding of the life of Buddha? What do you know? Tell me what you know, and then all the gaps I'll fill in over the time. It's hard, really hard.
Or even supply them reading materials.
Yeah, give them something.
Like,
yeah.
You not notice that.
And if you've got
the
whole book,
before,
you'll have all the activities that you can do, where you might say, rather than do that activity on the precepts this week, I want you to do this one on the life of Buddha, so that you get a better idea. It's hard. That's never easy. Happens every time a new kid comes to a school. But especially in religious education, it's even harder. Anything else?
Can we get everyone to quickly, very quickly,
report
back to us what they've learned within 60 seconds.
60 seconds. Yes, 60 seconds, what you've learned today.
Something that you've
still linked up.
Should I pick the five who I thought listened the best? That's right, to have a think about it. Yeah, even just one thing you've learnt today that you'll take away to hopefully help you in the next turn.
Reflections?
I was never in a boat with a shark.
I was never in a boat with a shark, you are right. Please don't ever come to my school and tell my kids that. There's always that one person that learnt nothing.
I like what Venerable said, when you get students in that are behind, how to coach them in that short time frame.
Mm.
That sequence is important, very, very important. Otherwise, they get down the end of the track, and after many classes, they go, "What's it all about?"
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Alison, I think next workshop we can talk more a little bit more about curriculum differentiation.
Sure.
Yeah, that's actually the most challenging.
It is definitely the most challenging. My teachers find it hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, with 4 years of education training, it's still hard. Differentiation is the hardest. Yes,
I like a lollipop.
Yeah, the drawing.
The student name and not the pet the mouse.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I
the
like
questioning technique, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, really, I've got 30 students. I really don't understand which name, which name.
Yes.
So pick it up and after using it for the class,
yes.
And use the new one.
Keep
anybody
it for that.
Opportunity to talk.
Absolutely, yeah, that does work. The paddlepop sticks work.
Thank you, I have learned that, you know, like from you, for the energy that you actually got, you actually talk with passion and you talk with confidence, and that is actually beautiful. That you know your vibration is there. You know, because you talk from your heart.
Mm.
Yeah. You know,
I love
you,
it.
You know, yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you. I do love it.
Any new ideas that are helping you with your lesson plan?
Yeah.
So we have to go back to the learning intention.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
I've learned about this.
Yeah,
it's
very
good.
Yeah.
No,
it's hard to take it
along. It's good to have meditation in there because, you know, you're looking at the kids, you're thinking what you're doing, and sometimes you just forget.
Yes,
yeah.
It's a conscious of reinforcing.
Yeah. I think it's just as much for the teacher as it is for the kids, to be fair. Because it does keep us focused and it does keep us going back.
Yes.
Have I actually given them the tools to be able to do that when they go back on their own?
Yeah.
Keeps us very focused, and that once you've got those set tomorrow when you're planning some of your lessons, you'll see how much easier it is to come up with the activities that you want to do to teach or to get them to do independently, because you'll keep going back to that. Will it actually help them get that? Because if it doesn't, don't do it. Choose something else. It helps. Yes, Tom.
I got one question is for year one, they can't read the story, so we read to them, right?
Sure.
So what happened year three and four, because they're pretty good in reading already, and for me, I let them do read, but I found waste a lot of time.
Because
they
read differently.
We don't have a lot of time to follow the concept of that.
Sure.
So what do you think about
it? Yeah, I think sometimes as kids get older, we forget that actually reading to them is just as valuable as having them read it themselves. So reading things to kids is beautiful. Like I think no matter how old they are, I'd love someone to read to me right now. You know, like if someone was going to read to me, it's nice just to be listening to something. So to have it in front of them and follow is useful because it kind of doubly reinforces. They're not just hearing it, but they're seeing it as well. And by the time they get to year three and four, they've kind of worked out their learning style. You know, some people are really good at listening. Other people need to see it to be able to learn it. Yeah, visual learners. So there's lots of different learners. We could probably do a little bit on that as well as the differentiated stuff. But, so if they've, rather than let them just go off and read it individually, let them have a copy of it, but read with them. And you could even say, you know, is there anyone who wants to volunteer to read a paragraph? Well, then you can read that one and I'll keep reading. So, you know, it kind of just keeps everyone on the same page, but they've got it and they feel like they're a bit more in ownership of it, I guess. They're likely to get more out of it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hate to interrupt. It's afternoon tea time. If we finish it a little bit late, which means we will need to cut a bit of our afternoon tea time.
Yeah. So do you want to take photos so we can actually put photos? Is it time or not
now or tomorrow?
Do that tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
But tomorrow, Alison will be here tomorrow.
Maybe
at the end of
Photoshop me in.
At the end of the afternoon tea.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think I better let you go now because snacks and food and drinks are prepared at the information centre. So if you can come back by 4 o'clock, that'd be 20 minutes.
Oh wow, nice.
5 o'clock.
4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, you go home already.